Games. Kids learn by play. I learned so much about money from my rich dad because he made learning fun. He always played games and did not try to cram information down my throat. If I did not want to learn something, he would let me move on to something I was interested in learning. Or he made what he was trying to teach me more interesting. He usually had something tangible from the real world, something physical for me to see, touch, and feel as part of the lesson. And most importantly, he did not try and break my spirit. Instead, he encouraged my spirit to get stronger rather than weaker. When I made a mistake, he challenged me to learn the lesson rather than give me the right answer. He had the patience to teach with love. He did his best to draw out the smart kid in me rather than perceive me as incompetent or slow or label me as having a learning disability because I was taking a little longer to understand something. He taught according to my time schedule of learning and my desire to learn, not with the need for me to pass a test. He definitely was not concerned about me competing against other kids for the best grades, as many parents are. My smart dad taught in much the same way. One of the best ways to learn something is to teach what you want to learn to others. As they teach in Sunday school, give and you shall receive. The more time you personally invest in teaching your kids about money, the smarter all of you will become. How to begin teaching your child about money. For centuries, games were used for education. Royalty used to teach their children the art of strategic thinking using the game of chess. Backgammon was also used to teach strategic thinking. Today we need to teach our children to think strategically when it comes to money. In 1996, after I developed Cashflow 101, which is the board game that teaches the principles of the financial statement to adults, the market response was that a similar game was needed for children. In late 1999, we introduced Cashflow for Kids. Our board games are the only games that teach children the fundamentals of the financial statement, the child's report card after he or she leaves school, and cash flow management. The game of chess and the cash flow games are similar in that they are games without answers. They are games designed to make you think strategically and plan into the future. They are games where each time you play, it is different. With each move or change, the immediate strategy must change in order to have the long-term plan work. Ultimately, the key to teaching financial principles is to have fun, play games, and begin to spark the interest in learning about money, money management, and financial statements. Because a game is a tangible educational tool, it involves all four main points of the learning pyramid. Games give physical learners an equal chance to learn alongside kids who are good at learning mentally or abstractly. It involves the emotions because it is fun and exciting. Games use play money rather than real money, so the mistakes are less painful and less emotional. Many adults leave school terrified of making mistakes, especially financial mistakes. Games allow students of all ages to make financial mistakes and learn from them without the pain of losing real money. If a child knows how to survive financially, he or she will be more confident and less dependent on the idea of job security for financial security. Children may be less susceptible to getting deeply into consumer debt as adults. Most importantly, learning how to manage money and how a financial statement works may boost their self-confidence, allowing them to do well in the real world. For more information on our games, visit our website at richdad.com. And remember that games are an important step in the education process and can help your child see and plan for the future. Teaching children to have their money work hard. The following are some ideas that you may want to use to teach your children to have their money work hard for them. I caution parents not to force children to learn this if they do not want to learn. The trick of parenting is to find ways to make children want to learn rather than forcing them to learn. The three piggy bank system. When I was a little boy, my rich dad asked me to buy three different piggy banks. They were labeled tithing. Rich dad believed in giving to churches and charities. He took 10% of his gross income and tithed it. He often said, "God does not need to receive, but humans need to give." Over the years, I have found that many of the richest people in the world began their lives with the habit of tithing. Rich Dad was certain that he owed much of his good financial fortune to tithing. He would also say, "God is my partner. If you don't pay your partner stops working, and you have to work 10 times harder." Saving. Bank number 2 was for savings. As a rule of thumb, Rich Dad believed in having enough savings to cover 1 year's worth of expenses. For example, if my total expenses per year were $35,000, he thought it important to have $35,000 in savings. After he had that amount in savings, he would tithe the rest. If my expenses went up, then the amount I had in savings had to go up accordingly. Investing. In my opinion, it is this bank that gave me a very big head start in life. It was from this third bank that I got the real money to begin taking risks, making mistakes, learning lessons, and gaining experience I would use for the rest of my life. One of the first things I began to invest in were rare coins, a collection I still have today. After coins, I invested in stocks and then real estate. But more than the assets I was investing in, I was investing in my education. By getting your children 3 piggy banks, you can begin to give them the seed capital to begin gaining this priceless experience while they are young. Once they have the 3 banks and are developing good habits, you may want to take your children down to a brokerage house and open an account buying mutual funds or stocks with the money emptied from their piggy bank labeled savings. I recommend letting the children do it so they gain the mental, emotional, and physical experience of the process. Pay yourself first. Recently, I was on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and one of the main questions the audience had was, how do you pay yourself first? I was shocked to realize that for many adults, the idea of paying yourself first was a new idea and also a difficult one. The reason it was difficult was because so many adults were so deeply in debt they could not afford to pay themselves first. After leaving the show, I realized that by starting my life with a 3 piggy bank system, my rich dad was teaching me how to pay myself first. Today, even as adults, my wife and I still have 3 piggy banks sitting on our dresser, and we still tithe, save, and invest. When I study the lives of very rich people, this idea of paying yourself first is paramount in their minds. It is fundamental to their lives. Recently, I was listening to Sir John Templeton saying that he does his best to live on 20% of his gross and save, tithe, and invest the other 80%. Many people are living on 105% of their gross and have nothing left over to pay themselves with. Instead of paying themselves first, they pay everyone else first. Rich Dad took the idea of the 3 piggy banks one step further. He wanted to make sure that Mike and I could then relate our piggy banks to our financial statements. As we continued to fill our piggy banks, he would also have us account for our banks on crude financial statements. He had us set up the same diagram as before, with boxes for income and expenses and other boxes for assets and liabilities. Each bank had balance information, and if we moved some money out of our account or bank, we had to account for it. For example, if I moved $25 out of my tithing account and gave it to charity or for a church offering, I had to account for it on my monthly financial statement. By having 3 piggy banks and being held accountable for my money on my financial statement, I gained years of financial education and experience that most adults, much less kids, never receive. My rich dad would say, the word accounting comes from the word accountability. If you're going to be rich, you need to be accountable for your money. I cannot tell you how important the idea of accountability and accounting is for me in my life today. Not only is it important for me, it is important for everyone. When a banker politely turns you down for a loan, in many ways they are saying they are concerned with your lack of accountability for your money. When the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, says that a country is not transparent enough, in many ways it is asking the country to show them clearer financial statements. Transparency means they want to see where the cash is flowing and to whom it is flowing. In other words, the IMF will hold an entire nation accountable, just as my rich dad held Mike and me accountable. So regardless if you are a small child, a family, a business, a church, or a large nation, the ability to manage your money and be accountable for it is an important life skill worth learning. The difference between good debt and bad debt. My real dad spent most of his life doing his best to get out of debt. My rich dad, on the other hand, spent most of his life trying to get into more and more debt. Instead of advising Mike and me to avoid debt and pay off bills, he would often say, if you want to be rich, you must know the difference between good debt and bad debt. As I talked about earlier, one of the definitions of intelligence is the ability to make finer distinctions, or multiply by dividing. More specifically, Rich Dad did not just blindly think that saving money was good or that debt was bad. Instead, he spent a lot of time teaching us the difference between good savings and bad savings, good expenses and bad expenses, good debt and bad debt, good losses and bad losses, good income and bad income, good taxes and bad taxes, good investments and bad investments. Rich Dad taught us to think and to raise our financial intelligence by making finer distinctions. In other words, the more you can tell the difference between good debt and bad debt, good savings and bad savings, the higher your financial IQ. If you see something such as debt as only bad, then that means your financial IQ could be higher. For more specific information on debt, see the print or audio version of Rich Dad's Guide to Investing. The main point here is to give you some time to think about what you are teaching your children about debt. If you want your child to grow up and have the opportunity to become very rich in a short period of time, then you as a parent need to teach your child the basic skills of debt and debt management. Words of Financial Wisdom. When people ask me what they can do to begin improving their financial position in life, I say the first step to getting rich is to add financial words to your vocabulary. I then say, if you are truly serious about becoming rich, set a goal to learn 1,000 financial words, and you will be far richer than people who don't use the same words. I end by saying, if you have command over financial words, your self-confidence improves, and the best thing about this investment of your time is that words are free. Words allow the mind to see what your eyes cannot. Intelligence is the ability to make finer distinctions. Words allow your mind to make those finer distinctions. Words allow your mind to see what your eyes cannot. For example, there is a world of difference between an asset and a liability, but most people are not aware of the differences. And simply knowing that difference can greatly influence the financial outcome of a person's life. There are major differences in the three different types of income: earned, passive, and portfolio income. When you say to your child, go to school, get good grades, and get a job, you are advising your child to work for earned income. One big problem with earned income is that it is the highest tax of the three incomes, and it also gives you the least control over taxes. My rich dad advised me to work hard for passive income, which is primarily income from real estate. It is the least taxed of the three incomes and offers you the most control over taxes. Portfolio income is typically income from paper assets and is in most cases the second best type of income to receive. As you may be able to tell, the difference in words is not great, yet the difference in outcome to a person's financial report card is staggering. But how do numbers define the distinction? When accurate numbers are added to words, the mind becomes supercharged. As most stock investors know, there is a significant difference between a stock with a P.E., price-earnings ratio, of 10 and a stock with a P.E. of 15. Also, most sophisticated investors would not buy a stock only on P.E. alone, regardless if it is high or low. A sophisticated investor would need further words and further numbers. There is also a tremendous difference in useful knowledge between someone who says, our business made a lot of money last month, as opposed to someone who says, our business grossed $500,000 last month with a 26% net profit margin, which was achieved by increasing sales by 12% over the previous month, at the same time reducing operating expenses by 6%. This information would give me much more insight into whether or not I would invest in this company. This added information, combined with the company's P.E., would reduce my investment risk and increase my chances of making money as an investor. The power of communication. The power of a strong financial vocabulary, coupled with an appreciation for numbers, can give your child a tremendous financial head start in life. One of the reasons I personally found school so boring was because I learned words without numbers attached. I learned how to use words in English class and how to use numbers in math class. Separated as subjects, I found both boring and unrelated to my real life. When Rich Dad began teaching me how to invest playing Monopoly, I gained a whole new vocabulary, and I found a love for doing math. All I had to do was put a dollar sign in front of the numbers, and my interest soared in both words and numbers. When children play the cash flow games, they learn a whole new financial vocabulary, and they learn to enjoy mathematics at the same time without realizing it. My smart dad called the combining of words and numbers the power of communication. Being an academic scholar, he was always interested in the ways people communicate. He found that when people shared the same words and were excited about measuring the distinctions found in each word, communication between them flourished. He said to me, "The word communication finds its base in the word community. When people enjoy the same words, a community is formed. People who do not share the same words or are not interested in their measurement are people who are excluded from that closed community." One way to give your children a financial head start is to begin teaching them the words of money and an appreciation for measuring the differences. If you do, they have a better chance of being included in the community of the financially sophisticated. If they do not possess the words and the appreciation for measuring the words, they may be excluded from that same community. What is an allowance for? The other day I watched one of my friends give their child $100. The child took it and started to walk away. My friend then said, "Aren't you going to say anything? Aren't you even going to say thank you?" The 16-year-old boy turned and said, "Thank you for what?" "The $100 I just gave you," said the father. "This is my allowance," said the boy. "I deserve it. Besides, other kids in school get much more than this. But if you think I have to say thank you, then I'll say it. Thank you." The boy stuffed the money in his pocket and walked out the door. This is a prime example of the entitlement mentality that many of today's youth have developed. Unfortunately, I see this happen all too often. Sharon Lecter, my co-author, says parents have become ATM machines for their children. "Money is a teaching tool," said Rich Dad. "I can train people to do many things. All I have to do is wave a few dollars in the air and people respond. Just as an animal trainer uses treats to teach his animals, money is used in much the same way for humans." "Isn't that a cruel way of looking at money in education?" I asked. "You make it sound so crude and dehumanizing." "I'm glad to hear you say that," said Rich Dad. "I wanted it to sound crude and dehumanizing." "Why?" I asked. "Because I wanted to make you aware of the other side of money. I wanted to show you the power that money can have. I want you to know the power, and I want you to have respect for that power. If you have respect for the power, hopefully you will not abuse the power of money when you have it." "What do you mean, the other side of money?" I asked. I was now 17 years of age and entering my senior year of high school. Up to this point, Rich Dad had been teaching me how to acquire, keep, and invest money. Now, he was beginning to teach me something new about money. Rich Dad pulled a coin from out of his pocket. Holding it up, he said, "Each coin has two sides. Remember that. Someday you will be a very rich man, and I want you to be aware of the power and responsibility you will have when you acquire your money. Instead of using your wealth to keep people enslaved to money, I ask that you use your wealth to teach people to be the masters of money. Just as you were teaching me," I said. Rich Dad nodded his head. "The more our civilized society becomes dependent upon money for life itself, the more power money has over our souls. Just as you can teach a dog to obey with dog biscuits, you can teach human beings to obey and to work hard all their lives with money. Too many people work for money just to survive, rather than focus on providing goods or services that make our civilized society better. That is the power money has as a teaching tool. There is both a good and bad side to that power." What do you teach your child with money? I'm surprised at how many young people have the idea that they deserve money, or that they are entitled to it. I know it is not all kids, but I have noticed more young people with that type of attitude. I've noticed that many parents use money as a way of relieving guilt. Since so many parents are so busy working, some of them tend to use money as a substitute for love and personal attention. I've noticed that parents who can afford a full-time nanny will usually have one. A growing number of single moms who own their own businesses take their children to work, especially during summer months. But there are still too many kids left alone at home, called latchkey kids. They come home from school and are unsupervised for hours because both mom and dad are at work, working hard to put food on the table. As my rich dad said, money is a teaching tool. Teaching the value of exchange. Parents can teach their children an important lesson about money if they teach them about the concept of exchange. The word exchange was a very important word to Rich Dad. He would say, "You can have anything you want as long as you are willing to exchange something of value for what you want." In other words, the more you give, the more you get. I am often asked to be someone's mentor. One of the common things I notice is how few of these requests come with one of the most important words in business, and that word is exchange. In other words, if you are asking for something, then what is it you are willing to give in exchange? Remember the story of Rich Dad taking away my 10 cents an hour and having me work for free. Well, years after the lesson, I asked him if he would have continued to teach me if I had not worked for free. His answer was, "No, absolutely not. When you asked me to teach you, I wanted to see if you were willing to give something in exchange for my lessons. If you were not willing to give something in exchange, then that was the first lesson for you to figure out. After I turned you down. People who learn to expect something for nothing usually get nothing in real life." The lesson behind this lesson is that most people don't become rich because they are taught to look for a job, which in exchange offers them money. But as Rich Dad explains, you cannot expect to get rich if you go around looking for people to pay you for what you do. You need to look for business or investment opportunities rather than a job. It is a lesson that very few learn, but you must if you want your children to be financially free. How much should I pay my child? I'm often asked questions such as, how much allowance should I give my child? Should I stop paying my children for anything they do? I pay my child for good grades. Do you recommend that? Should I tell my child not to get a job at the mall? My standard answer to questions such as those is, how you compensate your child is up to you. Every child is different and every family is different. I simply remind you of my rich dad's lessons, and please remember that money is a very powerful teaching tool. If your children learn to expect money for nothing, then that may be how their lives wind up. A life of nothing. If your children only study because they get paid to study, then what happens to them when you are not there to pay them to study? The point is to be careful about how you use money as a teaching tool. Because even though money is a powerful teaching tool, there are far more important lessons for your child to learn. And one of those lessons is the lesson on service. Charity begins at home. My mom and dad were very generous people, but they were not generous in the same ways as my rich dad was. As the head of education for the island of Hawaii, my dad would come home, eat dinner with the kids, and go off to PTA meetings 2 or 3 times a week. There were many times he would drive over 100 miles to the meeting and return that night just to see and greet his own kids in the morning. My mom often had us kids work with her at the church bake sales or rummage sales. She believed strongly in volunteering her time and asked her children to do the same. As a registered nurse, she also volunteered regularly for the American Red Cross. I remember during disasters such as a tidal wave or a volcano destroying homes, she and my dad would be gone for days on end, serving those in need. Rich Dad and his wife came from much the same point of view as my mom and dad. His wife was active in a women's group that was constantly raising money for worthy causes. Rich Dad donated money constantly to his church and various charities, as well as serving on boards of 2 nonprofit organizations. The lesson I learned from both sets of parents was that regardless if you are a socialist or a capitalist, charity does begin at home. And if you want your children to be rich, teaching them to serve as many people as possible is a priceless lesson for them to learn. As my rich dad said, the more people you serve, the richer you become. Finding your child's genius. My rich dad strongly encouraged his son and me to become rich by serving as many people as possible. He would say, when you focus your mind on making money only for yourself, you will find it difficult to become rich. If you are dishonest, greedy, and give people less than they pay for, you will also find it difficult to become rich. You can acquire wealth in those ways, but that wealth will come with a very high price. If you focus on your business first and serving as many people as possible, thinking only of making their lives a little easier, you will find tremendous wealth and happiness. My smart dad truly believed that there was a genius in each and every child, even if the child did not do well in school. He did not believe that a genius was someone who sat in a classroom and knew all the right answers. He did not believe that a genius was someone who was smarter than anyone else. He truly believed that each of us had a gift, and that a genius was simply a person who was fortunate enough to find his or her gift, and then found a way of giving that gift. To make his lesson on genius interesting, he would tell us a story. He would say, before each of you were born, you were given a gift to give. The trouble is, no one told you that you were given this gift, and no one told you what to do with your gift after you found it. After you were born, your job was to find your gift and give it. Give it to everyone. If you gave your gift, your life would be filled with magic. My smart dad also wrote the word genius as genie in us. Continuing with his story, he would then say, a genius is someone who finds the genie inside of him or herself. Just as Aladdin found the genie inside the bottle, each of us is to find the genie inside of ourselves. That is where the word genius comes from. A genius is someone who found the magical person inside of him or herself. A genius is someone who found the gift he or she was given. My smart dad would then add his word of caution. When you find your genie will grant you 3 wishes. Your genie will say, wish number 1 is, do you wish to give your gift to yourself? Wish number 2 is, do you wish to give your gift only to those you love and those close to you? Or wish number 3 is, do you wish to give your gift away? Obviously, the lesson for us kids was to choose choice number 3. My smart dad's lesson always ended with him saying, the world is filled with geniuses. Each of us is a genius. The problem is, most of us keep our genius locked tightly away in our bottle. Too many of us choose to use our genius only for ourselves or just for those we love. The genie only comes out of the bottle when we choose choice 3. The magic only happens when we choose to give our gifts away. Both my dads believed in the magic of giving. One dad believed in building a business that served as many people as possible. The other dad believed in finding the gift we were given, finding the genie in us, and letting the genie's magic come out of the bottle. Both dads' lessons worked for me as a little kid. Both stories gave me a reason to live, a reason to learn, and a reason to give. As silly as it sounded, as a 9-year-old kid, I believed in the possibility of there being a genie in me, and I believed in magic, and I still do. How else could a boy who nearly flunked out of school because he could not write, write an international best-selling book?
How do you find your child's natural genius? Most of us have been asked, what sign are you? And if you are a Libra, you would say, I'm a Libra, what are you? Most of us know what sign we are, just as most of us know there are 4 main groups of signs. They are earth, air, water, and fire. Most of us also know that there are 12 signs. Unless we are astrological experts, however, most of us do not know the personality traits of all 12 signs. We are generally aware of the personality traits of our own astrological sign and maybe a few others. Knowing the differences helps our relationships because we are better able to understand each other. Few of us realize that just as there are different personality traits, there are also different learning traits. One of the reasons our current educational system is so painful for many people is because our school system is designed for only a few of the different learning traits. That would be like having a school system designed only for the fire signs, and wondering why the water, air, and earth signs don't like school. Different strokes for different folks. Most of us have heard the saying, different strokes for different folks, and I would agree. When I was about 5 years old, my family went to a popular beach with our neighbor's family. Suddenly, I looked up and saw my friend Willie struggling in the water. He had fallen into a hole and was drowning because he could not swim. Yelling and screaming, I finally attracted the attention of a high school boy, and he jumped in to save Willie. After that nearly fatal accident, both families decided it was time all the children take formal swimming lessons. Soon I was at the public pool learning to swim, and I hated it. It was not long before I was out of the pool and hiding in the locker room, terrified of being yelled at because I could not swim properly. From that moment on, I learned to hate the smell of the chlorine in a freshwater swimming pool. Over the years, I learned to swim in the ocean because I loved spearfishing and catching lobsters. At 12 years of age, I began body surfing and then surfing on surfboards, but I still could not swim the proper strokes. Willie, on the other hand, took to swimming like a fish and was soon swimming competitively throughout Hawaii as a kid and teenager. In high school, he went on to swim in the state championships. Although he did not win, it shows how he took a near-death accident and turned it into his passion. His same accident caused my family to force me into swimming lessons, and I learned to hate swimming pools and never learned to swim properly. When I went to school at U.S. Merchant Marine Academy in Kings Point, New York, we were required to take a swimming test in a pool. I failed. Although I had been spearfishing, scuba diving, and surfing in very large winter surf, I failed my swimming test because I did not know how to swim proper swimming strokes. I remember writing home and trying to explain to my friends that I was taking swimming lessons because I failed my swim test. These were the friends I spent years swimming with in some of the most dangerous surf in Hawaii. The good news is that I finally learned to swim a proper dog paddle and proper freestyle stroke in a freshwater pool. Up to then, I swam with a combination breast stroke and side stroke with a scissors kick, which was not very attractive and made no sense to the swim instructors. The point here is that although I could not swim a proper stroke in a freshwater pool, I was very comfortable swimming in the ocean, even the very rough open ocean. I'm still not a good swimmer, but I feel very much at home in the ocean. I know people who can swim perfect strokes in a pool but are terrified of rough seas, riptides, currents, undertows, and pounding waves. As the saying goes, different strokes for different folks. The point of this is that we all learn differently, and we all do things differently. Although I can now do a proper swim stroke, I find it much more practical to swim with my own strokes. I will never swim competitively like my friend Willie, and I will never get awards for my graceful style, but doing things in my own way works for me. And I think most of us are that way. We know what we should be doing, but we would rather do things the way we like to do things. Your kids are the same way about learning. How to find your child's genius. To discover your children's genius, you must first find how they like to learn and why they will learn something. For example, I did not learn to swim because I did not want to learn to swim. I learned to swim because I wanted to surf. If not for surfing, I had no interest in learning to swim, and forcing me to learn only made me hate swimming even more. Instead of starting me in the shallow end with all the kids, I was much happier jumping in the deep end and learning to survive. The same is true with learning to read financial statements. I did not learn accounting because I wanted to be an accountant. I learned basic accounting because I wanted to be rich. If you think my swim strokes are ugly, you should see my accounting. My smart dad realized that I was not an academic star, and that is why he encouraged me to seek my own learning style. Instead of forcing me to conform and follow the traditional ways of learning, he encouraged me to jump in the deep end and swim for my life. He was not being cruel. He realized that my learning style was my learning style, and he wanted me to learn in the way I learn best. And just as my swim stroke is not pretty, the way I learn is not pretty. Other people learn in more traditional ways. Many people go to school, enjoy the classroom, and enjoy following a prearranged curriculum. Many like knowing that at the end of the curriculum, they will get a reward. They like the idea of knowing that they will get a passing grade or a degree for their efforts. As I said, they like the certainty of the reward at the end of the program. A key to people's success in life is finding out how they learn best and ensuring that they are in an environment that allows them to continue learning in the ways they learn best. The problem is, finding out exactly how we learn and what our natural gifts are is often a hit-and-miss process. Many people never find out their gifts. Once they leave school, they get jobs, and then they cannot continue the personal discovery process due to financial or family reasons. How to find one's learning style and one's unique genius has not been clearly defined until recently. One method of discovering how you or your child learns best is through the Kolbe Index, which is an instrument that measures your natural learning style. It measures your instincts or your natural genius. You can visit the Kolbe website and take the evaluation for $50. When I answered the 36 questions, I found that I thrived on physical risks, which I took to relate to my time in Vietnam, and that routine and follow-through are not my strongest abilities. This is perhaps why I never did well in structured learning environments like grade school. One of the key things I learned by taking the Kolbe evaluation was that everyone learns differently, and that life and learning prove the notion of different strokes for different folks. Success is the freedom to be who you are. When I was having trouble in school, my smart dad offered me the choice of finding my own learning style. Each time we add a new industry, such as the airline industry or computer industry, we expand our choices of careers and interests. One of the problems with raising kids today results from having too many choices or distractions. Nonetheless, the more choices we have, the greater chance we have for success. If parents begin to take choices away from their children, it can create discord in the home. If, as a parent, you say, "Don't do this," or "Don't do that," the chances are your children will do what you don't want them to do, or they may have already done it. One of the things that worked for me as a child was that my parents did not limit my choices, but instead simply offered me more choices. It does not mean I was not disciplined when I stepped out of line. But one of the things both my dads did was to offer me choices rather than limit me to what I could or could not do. By offering me a choice, I felt I had more control over my destiny and what I wanted to study. By having us do our financial homework, Mike and I soon realized that with each dollar we received, we had a choice, and that choice was found in the expense column. We soon realized that each time we earned or spent a dollar, there was a ripple effect or a consequence to that action. By taking a dollar and buying a liability, like a car, we knew that the long-term consequence was that we became poorer, not richer. Our school system focuses primarily on academic skills and professional skills. What is missing from our school system is the instruction of the skills my rich dad taught me, which are financial skills. To best prepare your child for the future, sound financial skills are vitally important. By teaching your children the fundamentals of financial education, the financial statement, you give your children the power to take control over their financial destiny. They will have that power regardless of what career they choose, how much money they make, or how well they did in school. As my rich dad often said, money does not necessarily make you rich. The biggest mistake that most people make is that they think that making more money will make them richer. In most cases, when people make more money, they get deeper into debt. That is why money alone does not make you rich. And that is why he taught Mike and me that with each dollar we spent, we had a choice, and with each choice there was a long-term consequence. The most important job in the world. My smart dad used to say, there are two kinds of kids. There are kids who succeed by following the path, and there are kids who hate following the path, and feel they must blaze their own trail. Inside each of us live these two kids. That was my smart dad's way of letting me know that it was okay for me to seek my own path in life, as long as I was honorable and used integrity in my search. And there were times I was off the path for a long time. Regardless of how long I was off the path, my dad kept the light on and always welcomed me home. He often did not approve of what I did, and he let me know that he didn't approve. But he did not stop me from doing things. He would say, "The only way a child knows what hot stove means is by touching a hot stove." I remember watching him address a PTA meeting one evening, telling his hot stove story. There were about 150 parents in the audience as he said, "The only way we as adults know what a hot stove is because we have all touched the stove. We all touched the stove even though we were told not to touch it." A parent then raised his hand and asked, "Are you saying that we should not discipline our children?" "No, I did not say that. I am saying that your child will learn by life's experiences. I am saying that the only way a child will know what the words hot stove means is by touching one. If we tell them not to touch the stove, we are being ridiculous. The kid is going to touch the stove. That is how God designed the child to learn. The child learns by doing, making mistakes, and then learning. We as adults, in our attempt to educate our children, tell them not to make mistakes and then punish them for making mistakes. That is a mistake." Another parent raised her hand and said, "So you're trying to say that making mistakes is natural, but making mistakes is how we learn." "That is what I'm saying," my dad said. "But the school system punishes our children for making mistakes," said the same parent. "And that is why I'm here tonight," my dad said. "I am here because we as teachers have gotten away from correcting, and we have been too focused on looking for and punishing students for making mistakes. I am afraid the more we punish mistakes rather than teach our kids to correct and learn from their mistakes, we miss the point of education. Instead of punishing kids for making mistakes, we need to encourage them to make more. The more mistakes they make and learn from, the smarter they become." My dad went on to explain that a child's natural curiosity is what drives a child to learn. But just as curiosity can kill a cat, too much curiosity can be destructive to a child. My dad's message that night was that the job of a parent and a teacher was to correct without damaging the child's natural curiosity. All children are born curious, and our job is to protect that curiosity, at the same time doing our best to protect the child. It is important to protect that curiosity, because that is how we learn. Destroy that curiosity, and we destroy the child's future.
Hello, this is Sharon Lecter. As a mom, a CPA, and the co-author of Rich Kid, Smart Kid, I would like to suggest some ways to teach your children a number of important financial lessons. Let me begin with the age-old battle. Allowance or no allowance? To pay an allowance or not to pay an allowance, it is a never-ending question. What is a parent to do? There just doesn't seem to be a definitive answer. Many parents get so lost in determining the allowance issue, they forget to teach their children what to do with the money they receive. Whether it is money from an allowance or payment for specific tasks, your children need to learn fiscal responsibility. Whether or not your child receives an allowance is not the magic formula for his or her future financial success. Whether your child learns fiscal responsibility is the magic formula. Great business owners and successful investors have mastered fiscal responsibility and demonstrate it with their continued success. The definition of allowance is a sum regularly provided for personal or household expenses. While an allowance may be appropriate in many cases, how it is determined and communicated to the children is vitally important. Will the children view the allowance as an entitlement or earned compensation for completion of agreed-upon tasks or responsibilities? In a world where the entitlement mentality is an ever-increasing problem with adults, we believe it is very important that parents do not train their children to think that they are entitled to a certain amount of allowance every week. For instance, consider the difference between these two statements. "John, since you are 12 now, you are old enough for an allowance. Every Friday I will give you an allowance of $10 to spend however you would like." Or, "John, you are busy with homework and sports activities every night, and we want to acknowledge your efforts and encourage you with those activities. While you are busy with these activities, you will receive an allowance of $10 per week for spending money." Pay for specific tasks. The debate of paying an allowance versus paying for specific jobs has many facets. We do not want to dictate parenting philosophy, but hope to provide alternatives that parents may choose from to fit their own personal parenting style. While paying an allowance can develop the entitlement mindset, paying for specific jobs can also have a negative inference in that it creates an employee mentality. You do this, and I will pay you $10. While earning compensation for completion of specific jobs or tasks is an important issue, it is only a component of teaching overall fiscal responsibility. Children need to understand that they need to contribute to the greater good of their family or social group without the expectation of financial reward. Too often, parents resort to bribery in an attempt to get their children to perform tasks that should be performed by the children for no financial reward at all. I can speak about this with great personal knowledge. When you find yourself resorting to bribery, hear it as a wake-up call. You are giving control over to your child when you try to bribe him or her. You are transferring your parental power into the hands of your child. Many parents whitewash this bribery form of parenting by calling it a reward system. Without dictating parenting philosophy, we have developed a parental strategy that may be helpful to you in determining the allowance policy for your family. We suggest that you develop a four-phase program with your children. Most importantly, we recommend that you communicate this policy openly and consistently with your children. Phase 1. Personal responsibility. Determine certain duties or tasks that your children need to perform for their own personal health and development. For example, brushing their teeth every morning and night should be expected and communicated as a personal responsibility. Some parents may include making your bed or taking your own dinner plate to the sink after dinner in this category as well. There should be no financial reward for personal responsibility. Phase 2. Family or social responsibility. Determine certain duties or tasks that contribute to the family or social environment that do not result in financial reward. These are acts that contribute to the greater good of your child's environment. Setting the table for dinner, reading to a younger sibling, or helping an elderly woman with her groceries are examples of family or social responsibility. There should be no financial reward for family or social responsibility. Phase 3. Establish an allowance or payment for specific tasks policy. This is optional based on a parent's individual beliefs. Determine guidelines that include what general tasks or duties are expected that will result in the earning of the allowance. Endeavor to prevent an entitlement attitude to develop in your children. Have the children participate in the determination of tasks expected. You may want your children to bill you for their allowance, thus making them more accountable for the underlying expectations. Washing and cleaning the car once a week could be an expectation that is outside phase 2 for some parents and could be a part of a consideration for an allowance each week. Some children are so busy with athletics and schoolwork that their parents provide them with an allowance to acknowledge their efforts. The important issue here is to openly communicate your expectation of your child's responsibility. Phase 4. Encouraging your child's entrepreneurial spirit. Encourage your child to think of ways to earn money. Have them suggest tasks or share stories of how other children have earned money to open their minds to opportunities that present themselves. Encourage them to identify specific tasks that need to be done and establish a set payment for completion of each task. Have them bill you for their work at completion. This is where Rich Dad's philosophy of your job versus your business needs to be communicated. The amount of pay determined for each task is the definition of your child's job. What your children do with their money is their business. The earlier in life your children understand the difference between working for others and working for themselves, the better chance for financial success they will have. Explain to them that what you do during the day, 8 to 5, is your profession or your job, but what you do with the money, your paycheck, is your business. Fiscal responsibility. Many parents get so lost in determining the allowance issue, they forget to teach their children what to do with the money after they receive it. Whether it is money from an allowance, gifts, or payment for specific tasks, your children need to learn fiscal responsibility. Fiscal responsibility is only developed after your child understands financial literacy. Furthermore, we need to battle today's entitlement trend by educating our children about delayed gratification and credit card debt. Financial literacy. Teach your children the concepts of assets versus liabilities, the difference between earned, passive, and portfolio income, the importance of passive and portfolio income, and the definition of doodads. Armed with this type of financial education, your children will be better prepared to develop sound fiscal responsibility. Delayed gratification. Fiscal responsibility demonstrates financial literacy as well as an understanding of delayed gratification. Delayed gratification is discussed in greater detail in the print and audio versions of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. One of the benefits of establishing a savings program for your children is to teach them the power of delayed gratification. By setting financial goals with your children and helping them determine a financial plan to achieve those goals, you instill the formula for success. The self-esteem that is built when they achieve these goals is priceless. In today's world of instant gratification, we are robbing our children of the powerful impact of the feeling of success they would have when they achieve a goal. We do this when we give them something instead of allowing them to earn it on their own. For example, your child wants a new bike. Start with the philosophy introduced in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, where Poor Dad said, "I can't afford it." But Rich Dad said, "How can I afford it?" Teach your child to say, "How can I?" instead of "I can't." Help him or her develop a plan on how he or she can earn the money to buy the bike. Encourage your child to think of ways to earn money. Help assess his or her progress along the way and make adjustments to the goal as needed. Have your child purchase the bike as his or her ultimate reward for completion of the plan. Acknowledge your child's effort and ultimate success. Debt and credit cards. Credit cards today are the tools of instant gratification. Unfortunately, the end result is delayed trauma when the bills arrive. A much better message is delivered with a financial goal setting and delayed gratification exercise similar to the bike story just described. No matter how we feel about credit cards, they are ever present in our society today. Our children are bombarded with "just charge it" messages every day through television, radio, or peers. Parents need to complete the picture for their children by exposing them to the other side of credit cards. Have them watch you pay bills. Explain the multiplying impact of the interest charged on the balance due on the credit cards. Show them that credit limits do exist for each card. Explain that there are also benefits from using credit cards. Credit cards can greatly assist in record keeping and tracking how you are spending your money. Many people use credit cards wisely, paying off the balance each month so no interest charges are incurred. Many parents have difficulty with their own credit card debt and are concerned about creating fear in their children if they share too much of their financial situation. The realities of real-life credit card debt may also be beyond your child's level of comprehension. We have created Cash Flow for Kids, a patented financial board game to help parents teach their children financial literacy. The game deals specifically with the pay cash or charge it decision-making process. Your children will learn both sides of the credit card world, instant gratification and delayed trauma when the bills arrive, while having fun and using play money. They will be much better prepared to face and avoid the perils of credit cards when they become adults. Part-time jobs. Once your child is old enough, it is important for him or her to learn about the responsibility of a job. Let them take on part-time jobs if their schoolwork and sports activities allow it. Review their first paycheck with them so they understand that the government takes their share of income taxes out before they get their check. When I was in high school, my parents required me to save or invest 50% of everything I made at my part-time job. It became a habit to immediately deposit 50% of my paycheck. I was allowed to spend the other 50% any way I pleased. This instilled the concept of pay yourself first at a very early age. When I graduated from college, I had accumulated over $20,000 in investment assets just from saving 50% of my income from part-time jobs as a student. As a parent, I used the same rule with my children when they started part-time jobs. They saw the pay yourself first concept in action and know the long-term benefit it can create. Unfortunately, my oldest son was bombarded by credit cards when he went to school. Unbeknownst to his father and me, he was in deep credit card debt before he knew it. This is where you see hindsight is 20/20. I felt that the best way to teach my children was through example. My husband and I have several credit cards, which we use regularly, including ones that count toward frequent flyer mileage. Our credit cards serve as great bookkeeping tools for us, and help us track where we spend our money. We pay the total amount due each month, so we never have to pay any interest on the credit cards. Our son, however, was swayed by the lure of low monthly payments. He got instant gratification, but found delayed trauma when his credit limit was hit. It took him 4 years to clean up his credit from that mistake, but he learned a very valuable lesson in the process. Today, he pays off his credit cards on a monthly basis. Today, he is fiscally responsible. Financial success. In summary, the age-old issue of whether to pay your child an allowance is a decision only you can make. But ask yourself what the policy you establish related to the allowance is teaching your child. Are you training your child to have an entitlement mindset, an employee mindset, or an entrepreneur's mindset? Fiscal responsibility combined with entrepreneurial spirit is an awesome combination. Help your children develop both, and then sit back and watch them achieve one financial success after another.
I agree with Sharon and would like to add one subtle distinction that may further clarify the lesson. My poor dad focused on how much money he made. That is why he always said, get a good education so you can get a high-paying job. My rich dad focused not on how much money he made. Instead, he focused on how much money he kept. That is why he said, how much money you keep is more important than how much money you make. He also said, people who focus only on how much money they make always work for people who focus on how much money they keep. Regarding the subject of allowance, teaching your child to focus on keeping money is more important than on making money. My rich dad would say that each dollar in the asset column was like an employee of his. It worked for him. Once a dollar was in the asset column, it never left the asset column. If he sold an asset, he would use the proceeds to buy another asset. The assets he bought can now be handed down for the next generation. By developing this philosophy and teaching it to your children, you can help them learn the path to financial independence.
Financial field trips. To conclude this program, we would like to offer some exercises to assist you in teaching your children about money. By using real-life experiences in teaching your children, you automatically show the practical application of the lessons. For instance, we have an exercise called Financial Field Trip to a Bank. After completing that field trip, your child will remember the lessons learned during the visit every time he or she passes the bank. It is often referred to as experiential learning, and it can be a powerful tool in teaching your children about money. The financial field trips were developed as dialogues, or scripts for you to use to teach basic financial concepts. There are no right or wrong answers. They are simple exercises and observations provided to help you create a dialogue with your child about specific financial issues. The intent is to broaden your child's awareness of the financial world we live in, but it's also an opportunity to have fun with your children.
Financial field trip to the dining room table. When you pay your bills each month, have your children sit with you. Let them look at each bill and explain what each covers. This will give them a better understanding of life. You do not need to provide total disclosure of your finances to your children, but start with a simple awareness of the basics. 1. Pay yourself first, even if it is only a few dollars. After watching you pay yourself first over and over, your child will most likely follow your example when he or she starts receiving money. 2. Pay household expenses. Explain the utilities bills and let them review the bills. It will give your child a better appreciation for how your money is spent. Understanding that you pay separately for lights, water, gas, trash pickup, and other household maintenance expenses will open your child's mind to the idea of how many businesses are needed to support your lifestyle. You may discover an additional benefit from this exercise. We have heard from parents that their children actually start turning off lights more often and take shorter showers after this lesson. 3. Pay your mortgage payment. Explain your mortgage payment to your child in very simple terms. Explain how the bank helps you buy your house by loaning you most of the money, and then you agree to pay the bank back over time. In order to be able to do this, you agree to pay the bank a certain fee, or interest, until the total amount is paid back to the bank. Show them your mortgage payment and how each payment includes payment for interest and payment against the principal amount due on your home. 4.
Pay your credit card bills. Explain your credit card bill to your child. This may be a difficult exercise for you if you are deeply in debt due to credit cards. Nevertheless, it is important for your child to understand the negative side of credit cards, as well as the charge it side of credit cards. Here are some simple definitions. Credit cards. Credit cards are issued by banks or other financial institutions or stores to you, so you can buy goods or services. You receive the goods or services immediately, and the bank or store pay for the goods or services for you. Statement. Each month they will send you a statement that shows how much you spent that month, how much they paid for you, and the date you must pay the total amount due in order to avoid interest charges and late payment fees. Interest on credit cards. If the amount due on your statement is not paid by the due date, interest will be charged on the outstanding balance, and at a much higher rate than other types of borrowing. Minimum payment due. Many banks and stores allow you to pay a minimum payment instead of the total amount due. Interest is then charged on the balance due. In fact, they discourage you from paying off your entire bank card bill at once. They feel that since they went to all the trouble to establish this credit for you, you should stretch your payments out so they can earn a lot more interest. Talk about credit card debt with your kids. The minimum payment is the single feature of credit cards that has created the tremendous debt that people face today. How does that happen? One month you are a little short of cash, so you pay the minimum payment due on your credit card. The card balance continues to grow as you continue to charge new items. Paying the minimum payment was so easy that you do it again the next month, and the next, but you also keep charging. Since you are paying the minimum payments, your credit rating is still good, and other companies send you new credit cards. Soon you have 5 different credit cards in your wallet. You continue to pay the minimum payments on the 5 cards, therefore keeping a good credit rating. But now you have a total balance due on all the cards that is staggering. One day you realize that you are paying out a lot of money in minimum payments, but your total balance due keeps increasing every month. It is only when you find you cannot even make the minimum monthly payments that your credit rating suffers. Then you find that you have spent the maximum on the credit limits of your cards. You cannot get any new cards because since you have missed a few payments, your credit is not so good anymore, and you can still barely pay the minimums due on your current cards. This is unfortunately the vicious circle many people find themselves in today. While this may sound very depressing and not something you want to burden your child with, it is best to start understanding this issue at an early age. How can you explain this complex subject to children? We have developed the game Cash Flow for Kids and included this very issue in the game. Your children will learn they have a choice, pay cash or charge it, and that each choice has a consequence. Initially, they usually choose to charge it, since that is what they are accustomed to hearing at home. The consequence of charging is that they must increase the expenses that they have to pay each and every payday. They soon learn it is better to pay a little more cash up front than to increase their expenses indefinitely. Remember to encourage your child to ask questions and answer the questions as honestly as you can. If your child asks a question that you cannot answer, seek someone who can answer the question and learn with your child. Finally, have your child help you file your bills after they are paid. Good record keeping is a learned habit. Develop a budget for a week of meals. Now that your child has a better understanding of paying the bills, it is time to introduce him or her to the concept of budgeting. Rather than disclosing your full financial picture to your child, start small. Have your child plan your menus for a week. The task will be to feed your family for a week within a set budget. Your child needs to make the family happy as well as meet the financial budget. It is important that you allow your child to develop the menu as well as purchase the food. You may assist in the preparation since cooking is not part of the lesson. 1. Set a budget. Determine how much you usually spend for a week of food for the family. You may want to include only breakfast and dinner meals for convenience. For purposes of this exercise, we will use $200 for a family of 4 for 7 breakfasts and 7 dinners. 2. Have your children plan the meals on a chart. For each meal, have your children record what the menu will be. You may want to visit the grocery store to help them understand the costs of certain items. 3. Have your children prepare a shopping list. After completing the menus for the week, have your children prepare a shopping list so that they will know what food needs to be purchased. 4. Have your child shop for the food. At the grocery store, watch your children as they review items for purchase. You may want to suggest that they take a calculator along to keep a total of the amount that is being spent. It is important for them to keep within the set budget. 5. Have your children record what they spent for each meal on the chart. You may want them to record the amounts on the chart as they shop. but they also need to fill in the chart at home from the receipt, as there may be taxes that need to be included in the meal costs. 6. Prepare the meals. Depending on your children, you may need to assist in the preparation of the meals. 7. Analyze results. First, check to make sure that the family was satisfied with their meals. This is a very important part of the exercise, as feedback comes with everything you do in life. Next, have your children compare their budgeted amounts to the actual amount spent for each meal. For each meal, determine the amount spent over or under budget, and then determine the total over or under budget spent for the entire week. 8. Review the process. This is the most important part of the exercise. Allow your children to share their experiences with you. What did they learn? Listen to their observations. You may find a growing appreciation from your children for the role you play as a parent. 9. Apply the process. Now discuss with your children how you need to budget for all expenses. If you prefer not to disclose your specific financial information, create a sample budget. Discuss the need to budget what income is coming into the household and how it will be spent for all the expenses that need to be paid. If they have completed the Pay Your Bills exercise, your child will have a greater understanding for what items need to be planned for. Just as they had to plan the menus within a budget, you must learn to plan your life within a budget. In the income category, you should include such things as paychecks, rent from rental properties, interest or dividends, and other income. From this, subtract amounts for investments. Have a regular amount in your budget to be invested. This is the pay yourself first category. Then go on to subtract your expenses, including taxes, mortgage payments or rent, food, clothing, insurance, gas, utilities, entertainment, and interest on credit cards or other debt. Now calculate the percentage of your income that you invest, keep as assets, and the percentage of your income that you spend. Are there ways for you to increase the percentage of your income that you invest, keep as assets, and reduce the percentage of your income that you spend? If you can increase your assets and therefore increase your income from assets, you will have more of your money working for you. Your paycheck represents you working for money. 10. Follow up. After a week or so has gone by, discuss the exercise with your children again. What do they remember from the experience? Would they like to repeat the exercise? Do they understand the long-term impact of investing, buying assets, or paying yourself first? Financial field trip to the bank. Take your child to the bank. Point out the tellers and the customer assistance people sitting at the desks. If the bank is not busy, ask the teller and customer assistance people to explain what they do. Have your child ask how much interest the bank pays on money deposited in the bank. Include savings accounts, certificates of deposit, and other bank instruments available. Have your child take notes. Then have your child ask how much interest the bank would charge for a car loan, house loan, or consumer credit loan. If the bank issues its own credit card, have your child ask what the interest rate on outstanding balances on the card is. Then leave the bank and go somewhere quiet and talk about the difference between what the bank pays in interest for savings accounts, money market accounts, and CDs, and what interest you pay the bank for things like a car loan, consumer loan, and mortgage. Your child should see the difference in rates, so making a chart will help. The goal of this comparison is to evaluate who is getting the better deal in bank transactions. Explain that it is always wise to have some money in a savings account, and that is how we start learning good money habits. But on the road to financial freedom, savings accounts are not good investment vehicles. You can even take this exercise further by examining the interest paid on a $10,000 car loan. If you pay 9% per year on the loan, that is $900, which you can compare to a 4% return of $400 on the same amount in a savings account. The difference is significant. Show your child how the difference can add up over a 10-year term. That is $5,000. In the savings account, you will still have your $10,000, but you will have paid about half its value to the bank in interest on your car loan. Not a very good deal. It would have been better to use your savings to pay off the loan and start a new savings plan. To complete the lesson, finish by evaluating the tax rate for income earned in savings accounts, CDs, or money market accounts. And be sure to include the inflation rate as well. The results may surprise you both. This exercise is intended to demonstrate the difference between saving and borrowing, as well as the difference between saving and investing. Additional components have been added to introduce higher levels of complexity. Start explaining the initial example to your child, and only continue if your child is interested and shows a true understanding of the initial concepts. financial field trip to the car or appliance dealer. If you are going to buy a car or a major appliance, take your child with you. Discuss the decision of paying cash or financing the purchase. If you finance the purchase, make sure you tell your child that you must now include the new payment in your monthly budget. By sitting through the financing process, your child can learn about borrowing and the need for good credit at an early age. Have the loan officer explain to your child what good credit is and how important it is. Generally, the loan officer will be happy to share stories about potential customers who have failed to qualify for credit, as well as other customers who have had stellar credit ratings. It is through this process that your child will start to understand how your personal financial statement and good credit are your report cards in real life. Financial field trip to a stock brokerage firm. After visiting the bank, take your child to visit a stock brokerage firm. Ask the stockbroker to explain his or her job to your child. You may want to prearrange this visit so that you can find a willing broker. If your child is a teenager, you may want to open an account at the firm. Have your child assist in the paperwork process. With your help and the stockbroker's assistance, allow your child to select the investments to fund his or her account. Have the broker explain the different types of investments and their relative rates of return to your child. Most adults do not understand the differences between corporate stocks or how mutual funds operate. Your child will have a terrific financial head start by understanding the basics of these investment tools. Unless your child is grasping every concept the stockbroker is presenting, it may be premature to discuss concepts like P/E ratios and other aspects of fundamental and technical analysis. Some parents have opened accounts for their children with the online trading firms. The choice is yours. In the earlier stages, however, it may be beneficial to have a stockbroker whom your child can meet with face-to-face. Your child will establish a relationship and be more at ease asking questions about what he or she may not understand. Teach your child how to read the financial pages of your local paper. Always start small. Do not allow your child to have investing authority over large amounts of money. This process is suggested for educating your child about the world of money and the power of money. Access to too much money could allow the power of money to take control of your child and create a monster. It is better to start small and learn by doing. It is much easier to recover from a small mistake than a big one when it involves money. Financial field trip to McDonald's. It shouldn't be too difficult to take your child to McDonald's. This time, however, plan enough time to cover allowing your child to eat and play a little, and then plan the following exercise. As you drive up to McDonald's, point out the following observations to your child. Someone owns the land underneath the McDonald's and gets paid rent for letting the McDonald's be on that land. The owner of the land doesn't even need to be here to be paid rent every month. The same person may also own the building and get paid rent for the building, too. Someone owns the company that makes the golden arches for McDonald's. Can you imagine a factory filled with golden arches? Maybe that's how McDonald's knows that all the arches will be the same color and look the same. After you have eaten, point out the following observations to your child. See the clerk behind the counter? She is an employee of McDonald's. She gets paid so much per hour to show up and do that job. Look around the restaurant and point out some of the following observations. See the cups they use and the paper they wrap the hamburgers in? Those are made specifically for McDonald's by other companies. Those companies have to make sure the cups and papers look exactly how McDonald's ordered them, or they may not get paid for them. Someone, also an employee, probably at a corporate office for McDonald's located somewhere else, is responsible for ordering those items and making sure they are delivered to each McDonald's before they run out of their current supplies. So it takes a lot of different companies with different areas of manufacturing expertise to supply products to McDonald's to make sure it operates efficiently. Have you ever noticed that every McDonald's is similar? The food is always the same. The employees are different, but usually say the same things. The ketchup is always the same. The reason this happens is because McDonald's has developed something called systems. Every store has policies and procedures that it must follow if it wants to continue being a McDonald's. These policies and procedures describe the systems that must be followed. They have systems that cover all aspects of their operations. There is a system for how they fill or clean the milkshake machine or the French fry fryer. Have you noticed that I've never talked about the owner of McDonald's being here? The owner has hired a manager. The manager is responsible for the day-to-day operations of the restaurant. The manager hires and fires the employees, makes sure sufficient supplies have been ordered, makes sure the customers are happy. The manager only contacts the owner to report the restaurant's progress on a regular basis, maybe on a weekly phone call or at a monthly meeting held at the owner's office or home. The McDonald's is an asset owned by the owner. He owns the systems that make the restaurant work. Then, summarize. So the owner has his or her asset working for him or her instead of the owner working for money. Because this asset is generating cash flow for the owner is free to spend his or her time on building more assets. Financial field trip to an apartment building. Find an apartment house near where you live, preferably one that your child will recognize or may see often in your travels. Park your car in front of the apartment building and make the following observations. This is an apartment building. The people who live here are called tenants, and they pay something called rent. The rent allows them to live in one of the apartments, but they don't own the apartment. It is as if they are paying to borrow the apartment. Usually, their rent also allows them to use the common areas like the pool, laundry room, or front yard. Then ask, how many units do you think there are in this complex? Let's say there are 12. Then summarize. So, all of these tenants are paying rent to use these apartments to the owner of the apartment building. So, the owner of the apartment building owns all of the units. Usually, the owner has also borrowed money, called a mortgage, to buy the building. Each month, the owner has to pay the bank a portion of the borrowed money, plus interest on that borrowed money. Then ask, if there are 12 units and each tenant is paying $1,000 rent per month, then the owner of the apartment building is making $12,000 from these units. Then summarize. So, if the owner collects more rent each month than the amount he has to pay to the bank, he will have a positive cash flow. Explain that there are also other expenses, like yard work, maintaining the pool, or painting the building that the owner also has to pay to keep the apartments in good shape for the tenants. Then summarize. So the owner needs to collect enough rent each month to make sure the income, rent, from the apartments is more than the expenses to own the building and keep it maintained. In most cases, the owner of the apartment building does not live in one of the apartments in the building. So the owner needs a system of how to charge and collect rent, and also a system to notify the tenants of any changes to the property. So this is similar to McDonald's in that it needs systems to make it run efficiently and successfully. This apartment complex is really just another business. You may not ever see the owner of the apartment building around here, since he or she does not live here. There may be a property manager who handles all the rent, maintenance, and tenant issues. Sometimes the property manager may live on the property, but not all the time. Then ask, so if the owner is never around and the property owner coordinates everything, is this similar to the owner of McDonald's? Then summarize. Once again, the owner of the apartment building owns an asset. He or she also owns the system, usually coordinated by the property manager, who makes sure the apartments are run efficiently and smoothly. The property manager reports to the owner on a regular basis, so the owner knows how much money the asset is putting into his or her pocket. The owner has his or her asset working for him or her, rather than the owner working for money. In summary, your child will see the apartment building in an entirely new light after this visit. Also, if you have chosen an apartment building near your home, every time your child passes it, he or she will be reminded of the business of owning an apartment complex. You can also explain that there are many people who own rental single-family homes and office buildings as investments to which this analysis can also apply. The apartment complex example was used because of its simplicity and familiarity to children. The important concept to be learned is the power of money. You want your money working for you instead of you working for money. Through these exercises, we hope that your child will fulfill his or her potential to be both rich and smart. Remember, their genius is within, and it's your job as a parent to help it develop and grow.
This has been a Time Warner Audiobooks production of Rich Dad's Rich Kid, Smart Kid, Giving Your Children a Financial Head Start. Written by Robert T. Kiyosaki with Sharon L. Lecter, CPA. Read by Jim Ward, and featuring commentary by Robert T. Kiyosaki and Sharon L. Lecter. Executive producer Maya Thomas. Produced and directed by Arthur G. Insana. Text abridged by Harriet Greenberg and William Whittington. Production coordinated by Dennis Kale. Rich Dad's Rich Kid, Smart Kid is also available in paperback from Warner Business Books.